It's loading your presentation now.
Great. Thank you.
Now, let's give it a minute. Here we are.
So, first of all, I have no disclosures to make, no relationships to disclose. Today I'm going to be talking about a qualitative evaluation of an asthma clinical quality improvement program. I'll spend a little bit of time describing the project, and then I'll be showing a 13-minute video after. I work for an organization called Maine Health. We're an integrated healthcare delivery system. We serve central, southern, and western Maine. It's about 3/4 of the state of Maine. We're a nonprofit organization. And we have many clinical quality improvement programs, such as asthma, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, depression. We started our work on asthma back in 1998. And as a way to disseminate that work, we started using the collaborative model, the Breakthrough Series Collaborative from the Institutes for Healthcare Improvement, to spread the work throughout the physician practice community. Just a quick slide on why asthma. It affects 22.9 million people in the United States, has an enormous health impact annually, with 1.8 million visits to the emergency departments, over 500,000 hospitalizations, 14 million lost work and school days, and an estimated 16.1 billion direct and indirect costs. In Maine, we have one of the highest prevalence of asthma in the nation. It's about 10.5% or over 126,000 people. We see over 8,000 visits to emergency departments, over 1,000 hospitalizations each year. And the asthma rates in Cumberland County, which is the focus of this project, are even higher than in Maine and in national averages. We don't know exactly why that is. Some of the contributing factors happen to be the cold climate, so we build our homes really tight and there's not a lot of ventilation. We also have fairly high rates of tobacco use, which contributes to it. And in Maine, we're kind of looked at as the tailpipe from the Midwest, so we get a lot of particulate matter and pollution coming over from the Midwest. The AH Asthma Health Program is a community-based asthma education program. It is evidence-based. We use the NHLBI guidelines. We founded the program using the Wagner's Care Model and have hospital-based community asthma education specialists throughout our health system who are providing one-on-one patient education with families, and they're also going out into the communities and working with school nurses and businesses and physician practices. If you're not familiar with the CARE model, that's just a depiction of it, and we ensure that our program touches on each of the elements of the CARE model. This is our program model to give you a sense of how we view it, where we have the patient and the family at the top of that triangle in partnership with their community asthma education specialist, and then the primary care provider and care manager. So that's the team, and we really look at all of the sectors within our community and try to touch each of those sectors with this program. So a little bit of history and background of the program. In 2002, we ran a clinical collaborative, again using the IHI model, involving just physician teams and hospital teams, so very clinical. We had the teams pick some standardized measures, so we looked at those measures over a year-long process. We looked at controller med use, severity classification, flu shots, things like that. So in 2002 to 2003, our clinical teams experienced quite significant improvements. In classification was a 52% improvement, and controlled medication use was a 22% improvement. So then we got to thinking, if we can be this successful in a clinical setting, what if we expanded it to really reach and match our program model? What if we applied that collaborative model to the community setting? Wondered what would happen, so we wrote a proposal for a grant from the Maine Health Access Foundation to improve asthma care among disparate populations in the greater Portland area, which is in Cumberland County with the higher prevalence rates. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the collaborative model, this is it in a nutshell. Get that? Sorry, you have to put up with my humor. That was a test to see if you guys have had enough Starbucks yet. So the collaborative, essentially what it is, it's a structured process where we're bringing teams together three times over the course of a year or 16 months, and we do pretty intense day-long learning sessions where we're giving them the clinical content, we're teaching them about the care model, we're teaching them about how to make improvements in their setting. And then they take those learnings and they go back into their setting, whether it's the physician practice or it's the daycare setting, the school, the organization, and implement their small plan, do, study, act cycles of change. And then they're meeting with each other and sending in senior leader reports. So the idea is that they're reporting to us, but they're also reporting back to their key stakeholders in their organization. We provided technical assistance. We had monthly conference calls. We utilized a listserv. We did one-on-one site visits. We did a lot of lunch and learns where if we knew that two disparate teams were working on the same issue, we would bring them together for lunch and watch the interactions, which was really interesting. At one point, we had a homeless clinic, a soup kitchen, and a physician office who were all in the same neighborhood. They'd never sat in the same room, but they all interact with the same patients. We put them in the same room, and it was amazing what happened, and the relationship that they have continues today. This is just the Breakthrough Series model for those of you who are not familiar with it. It basically describes the learning sessions, and then in between you have the PDSA cycles, the reporting, and then the support that underlies that process. So why an asthma collaborative? It worked with others to promote improvement. We've used it in diabetes and depression. We did a diabetes, obesity, and cardiovascular health collaborative. We've done tobacco collaboratives. We identified some resources to provide support and tools for the teams that were interested in making that change. And we really wanted to spread that change across the system and within the community, recognizing that patients are only in their primary care practices once or twice a year. So we included some physician practices. We included child care organizations. We had PROP, which is a nonprofit child and family services center in Portland. We had a faith-based child care center in greater Portland. We included several multicultural programs, the minority health program in the city of Portland, Somali healthcare in Portland, Latino health and community service, the Root Cellar, which is the soup kitchen, which is a multicultural and faith-based organization. We included a business, Barber Foods, which has a lot of minority employees. They actually make frozen chicken entrees. And when we approached them, I had no confidence that I would approach this frozen chicken food maker and say, hey, you got any interest in asthma? And actually they did. Some of the examples of what these teams did, just to give you a flavor, were Noah's Ark Child Care Center did an indoor air quality assessment. They removed some carpeting, some molds. They addressed other indoor air quality issues. They had a lot of anecdotal information about the kids in their center who had asthma were having fewer exacerbations throughout the day. They were not using rescue meds as much. The Portland School-Based Health Center increased the number of students with asthma who had the severity classification documented. They went from 50% at baseline to 81% at completion. We increased the number of students with asthma who had a current asthma school plan. And I have some examples of our tools, some of the clinical tools, the action plan, if anybody's interested after. They went from 18% at baseline to 27% at completion. We had a homeless clinic, and they wanted to focus on severity classification. They had absolutely no system for tracking this at the outset of this. They had only paper records. Obviously, people who don't have homes are very hard to track down. They actually mobilized some nurses, sent them out into the community, would go and find people and proactively give them flu shots and do asthma education in the field. They increased their control or medication use by from 0 to 96%. Our family practice center increased severity classification from 24% to 99% and control or med from 7% to 100%. These are just some run charts just showing that improvement over time, over the collaborative period. The top is the school-based health center. The bottom is the health care for the homeless. The minority health program through the City of Portland, and that was the Health and Human Services Department, we conducted some focus groups with the Latino and Somali communities, which are fairly significant in the greater Portland area. We also did some education in those populations regarding asthma. We uncovered quite a lot of interesting facts, such as there was a belief that asthma was contagious, and there was also a belief, particularly in the Somali community, that they came to Portland, and because of the cold climate, they caught asthma, or they got asthma, thinking that it was the cold when there was underlying disease and they were just having some triggers. Through that process, we hired and trained two community health outreach workers to act as a liaison and really bridge from the community to the healthcare setting in a way that was non-threatening. And we established an asthma helpline to create that bridge. These are our two community health outreach workers, Arala and Nalita. As part of this process, we did a press briefing, and we had we got a big article on the front page of the newspaper in color, which was very exciting for us. We did some community television and public radio, particularly in the Somali and Latino communities. We distributed posters and business cards. We put signs on the city buses about this initiative, and resulted in calls and referrals to asthma education. We reached 17% of our target population in the Somali community and about 18% in the Latino community. This is an example of the poster that we used for the Somali community. And this is an example of what we used in the Latino community. And this was all in very close collaboration with the community health outreach workers, trying to understand the culture and what would be meaningful to them. We looked at pre and post data and conducted some surveys with patients from the Family Practice Center, which showed some statistically significant results. And we had a lot of qualitative feedback. Stuff that describes the relationships that were formed, some of the stories that we heard from a homeless gentleman or another patient, and we thought, you know, we're capturing all this data, but we're really not capturing these stories, and we wanted to be able to tell the story back to our stakeholders. We also recognized the difficulty of evaluating a community-based intervention. We had some challenges with data collection. Lack of resources to collect the data, the actual existence of data, which was hard to get. We had a lot of processed data, but it's not really that compelling. And we really wanted, again, to describe that human impact. So what we did was created a DVD with patient and community member stories. We contracted with Maine Medical Centers, Centers for Outcomes Research and Evaluation, and we had an MPH data analyst who conducted the interviews. We hired an external videographer from Jet Pig Productions, and then created these videos to really share with the stakeholders so that each team that participated in this collaborative could have something to take back and show in their community to their stakeholders. We showed it to our funders, to the folks in the health system, to really demonstrate that impact. And now I'm going to show you the video. It's about 13 minutes long. Yeah.
Maine has some of the highest prevalence rates of asthma in New England, but also in the nation. We were hearing from community members and from organizations that asthma was a real issue for them. They didn't know where to go to get help. They didn't know how to access the healthcare system.
In this daycare, we had several children who suffered from asthmatic symptoms. We had one child, she'd go outside and try to play kickball with the other kids, and 5-10 minutes, she would have to stop and catch her breath.
About a year ago, almost to the day, I was homeless. I was living actually on the Eastern Prom, and a lot of tent or E2, whatever I had. And I was very, very sick. I mean, borderline pneumonia.
I've had it my entire life, and if nothing, I really understood 100%. I knew that it affected me breathing, especially as a child playing and running. You know, I couldn't do what other kids could do. As I got older, you know, in my teens, I started being treated. But again, I didn't get the information I needed from doctors. I didn't really understand how to treat my asthma.
There's a lot of misunderstanding outside about the disease. So, for example, in my community, a lot of people thought before that they get the sessions, the patients, that the asthma is because of the weather.
And many people in my community believe that asthma is contagious, or we will catch asthma from cold, and have a lot of different misunderstandings about asthma.
Okay, we have a lot of people that have asthma, but we didn't know much about it. But the reason why we joined this collaboration is to make the community identify needs, calling for asthma education.
7 years ago, we established the Asthma Health Program to address this growing problem. What we've done is we have assembled various teams from throughout the area. And these teams are physician practices, they are public health, businesses, childcare, schools, who have all come together with an interest in improving asthma care.
I wanted to see if going to the committee meetings were really beneficial. I said, okay, this is asthma, I am interested, so let me start chatting now how often this little girl had attacks. And I was surprised at the occurrence dropped immensely. They were less frequent, they were less violent. And I had asked the mother if the medicine had been changed. And she said, no, the doctor hadn't changed the medicine. So it had been just the simple common sense things that I had learned at going to the meetings. Simple things, we eliminated curtains and just went to balances. In this room, balances were even taken away because this is the room that had two of the most severe asthmatic children. And we bought new vacuum cleaner through our fundraisers to be able to keep the air clean.
My patients, I think, have learned as much as I have about asthma and asthma care, and they're becoming very comfortable with how to deal with it themselves.
She gave me a lot of information as far as, well, we have a little game of a flow meter. When I first came here, I was able to maybe do 250. Now I'm averaging around 400. Still not quite where I'm supposed to be, but, you know, that's a turn, green, yellow, red. I'm kind of borderline yellow, and sometimes into the green, depending. The back end of it's deeply in the red.
One of the things that I had never used before was an asthma action plan, and that's something that people, our patient, can take home, provided they have a home. And I do have some patients that didn't have housing that now do, and they actually have a refrigerator to put their asthma action plan on, so that when they're having difficulty, they actually know right where they are, whether they're in the green zone or the yellow zone, and know what to do to get themselves back into the green zone, which is where they need to be.
We started with identifying people with a diagnosis of asthma, sending them letters and information, and then contacting them by phone, doing a little assessment over the phone about their asthma management, providing specific education for their needs, and then talking to Barbara Foods resulted in offering a benefit of 100% to asthma specialists, pulmonologists, and allergists that have agreed to participate in this asthma disease management program.
After going through the program, I realized, you know, all the pieces fell into place. I understood how to treat the asthma and, you know, what I could do to prevent attacks. And if I did have an attack, I knew what to do and how to monitor myself. I had never used a peak flow meter before. I never heard of one. So, and I realize now what an important tool that is.
We wanted to be able to understand what issues affected minority populations, and in the end decided to establish an asthma helpline for people of those communities to be able to reach one of the city's community health outreach workers.
Many of the helplines have always been through somebody calling and there's an English speaker on the other side, and that discourages the people. But this is the first of its kind in Maine where you get people calling in their local language and they're getting the resources, they're getting reply in their local language.
Now they can call and have a person who speaks Spanish on the other line and they feel more comfortable.
It certainly makes a big difference when someone's educating you in any kind of subject in your own language. There's a woman, that's not a woman, who's been suffering from asthma for a long time, and I went to her home and we've done a lot to have showed her many the proper ways of doing things, and she's now controlling her asthma, and so she will tell her friend and her friend will tell her friend, and in our community news travels very fast.
But we are trying to target with this project, we're trying to target the entire community. We are coming up with bus stickers that have the helpline numbers and with the pictures of the indigenous community health outreach workers. These stickers will be supported and pasted at the community education centers, on the bus, at the community restaurants, just to make sure that people get that publicity, they get information as to where to call should they have asthma health questions.
What has happened as a result of this collaborative is that we have people who are now on the right medications, who are now managing their asthma better, who are missing fewer days of work and school because of their asthma, and were really in better control than they were before we started this project.
I learned things that we thought we already knew. I mean, you live in an environment and you think, well, you know, common sense things. But when I got there and I started talking to the nurses and the doctors and the other people, the healthcare people, I learned that there are so many other things that cause these symptoms that may not have been common sense because you just didn't think it.
What this collaborative has done for me has made my practice much more evidence-based. And the tools that I've been given and the worksheets and that sort of thing, but it's number-based, it's evidence-based, as opposed to just sort of feeling that I'm doing it correctly. I know I'm doing it correctly.
I'm getting older now, so you know, it's time to start taking care of myself. The best people that I've found.
Now that I understand about the asthma and how to treat it and what to watch for, I have a sense of empowerment. I'm in control. I am in charge of the asthma, and it's not in charge of me. And it's a great feeling. It's wonderful. I mean, it's taken 48 years to acquire, and I'm so thankful for that. I really am. It makes a big difference in my life.
Many of the committee members are now calling the numbers, trying to find out, oh, we heard about this. What is going on? We want to know more about that. And I must tell us, they are asking for more opportunities to have asthma health education provided to them at different areas and in different places.
It's exciting to be part of a team where the employer is asking, what can we do to address this asthma?
We have ongoing relationships with Maine Med Family Practice and the Root Cellar, patients that we, or facilities that we share patients with or share similar patients with, so that we can talk to each other, figure out what's going on in the community. We've done some brainstorming around main care cuts and how we're going to deal with that. And then just a lot of relationships with different other providers in the community.
The relationships that have formed among the teams in this collaborative will continue long after this project ends. The teams now know who to call when they have an issue. They see a lot of the same people every day, and now they've actually begun meeting and working on issues together and really, truly collaborating toward the greater good of the community.
I mean, we're all working together to make me a well person. I can call them anytime. They call me and find out if I'm doing all right. So it's a collaborative. It is a partnership, which is tremendous.
So in summary, this video really helped us to tell the other side of the story in conjunction with our charts and graphs, and really helped to get more funding for the program, to sustain the program, and we have continued relationships and partnerships with the folks in the community, and they were also able to share it with their stakeholders and continue the work and really spread and disseminate throughout the community. And I think we're going to be holding questions until the end.
Yes. Thank you, Julie. I have to be careful here. There's a lot of cables. our second speaker is Dorothy Height. She's going to be talking about Classroom Without Walls. And Dorothy is a family nurse practitioner and instructor at the Community Health Aid Training Center with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and she's been there for the last 25 years. Very good. She created the course on this distance learning network and has created the videos also. Bravo. I hope you can share some more information about the videos with us, because there's a lot of interest in how to create your own videos for work. In all of her free time, she is the founding member of a vocal group called Bel Canto, and they perform opera and classical vocal music, musical theater, and cabaret.
Thank you.
Just go to the next presentation.